All right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, March the 20th, 2014. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like descending into a police state, information security, and making fun of people on Tumblr. I'm Morps, and tonight we have with us a system currently fronting as RU486.
Thank you, Morps.
We have, God, now I got to think of all these. I can't think of, I can't remember all the damned pronouns. We'll pick it, we'll let Sard invent his own pronouns for tonight. Hi, Sard, how you doing?
Hi, my name's Sardonyx. What's a pronoun?
Exactly. I knew he was going to say, what's a pronoun? Product of the American education system.
We have chief, we have our chief ableist for the evening, Madman.
That does mean I hate cripples, right?
I think so. I'm not actually sure.
And I'm drinking 151.
There you go.
That's a trigger word, and you're oppressing me.
Help, help, I'm being oppressed.
Yeah.
Wait till I go beat someone to death with my penis.
What's even funnier was all the Tumblr reactions to those videos.
Maybe we should enlighten people what we're talking about.
Just go look up the Internet Aristocrat. That's all you got to do.
A very enlightened gentleman who would love to have at least do a 5-minute rant on the show each week.
Oh, if that dude wants a time slot on the station, all he has to do is ask. It's his. Show up. Anyways, for anybody who's not noticed it just yet, we are, in fact, running on the new stream. I've done some work on the website today. I'm not 100% happy with it, mainly because the listener map, while kind of neat, probably has a massive privacy problem. And I'm not entirely certain about the referral links coming out of our auto DJ. So we're working on it. It's kind of in flux. Of course, we're always working on it. But expect it to be more stable because we're running on it now. And whereas decking's going to be a little bit rocky, we're going to get the rest of the stuff sorted out. So... Sard, how's your end on things that are coming?
Good, man. Good. I'm hanging out, getting the other box set up and drinking a new type of beer, actually.
Oh, not, yeah, I forgot to ask everybody what they were drinking. I was making Tumblr jokes.
It's Day of the Dead beer. They're Hefeweizen. It's
that
actually,
is a good beer.
Yeah, it's good. What? Complaining again just because I like good beer and you like shit beer.
I have Morp's beer. I could be drinking Morp's beer while on Morp's show.
I'm in fact drinking Morp's beer. It's quite good.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I went over it last show. It's a bourbon barrel coffee stout. Came out quite nice.
Sounds epic. I wish I could try some.
Well, I'm not sure it would survive the trip in the mail. But I would
we
say
can hey, try.
Arrogant Bastard ships by mail.
I wonder how long you'd have to let it settle, though. It's got like sediment and stuff in it.
Oh, 30, 40 minutes, maybe.
You think?
If you want, so you could let it settle overnight. I may look into a little star foam cooler for shipping beer.
Yeah, we might seriously look into that. Anyways,
that would be amazing.
Yeah, we'll a commemorative station beer.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So, all right, let's go ahead and look at the discussion topic for tonight. Did anybody else actually read the full disclosure mailing list? I won't claim to have read it religiously, but I was on it off and on, just to look into it from time to time. Well, the full disclosure mailing list has shut down. The guys who founded it basically called it quits, and I don't really blame them. For, I guess, since you guys didn't look into it, full disclosure was initially set up for people to discuss and actually release vulnerabilities, bugs, security issues in software. The idea being if you publicly disclosed the vulnerability, the company would have to fix it because people would be abusing it if they didn't. And full disclosure, it'd get trolled a lot. You'd have people come in there spamming it and going absolutely insane about how you shouldn't be posting this and you're helping the hackers and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, no, we want to help the hackers. I mean, those are It's kind of the point.
They're the good guys.
Yeah. But, you know, so anyways, John Cartwright posted when he shut down the list. Let's see. His full message reads, "When Lynn and I created Full Disclosure List way back in July of 2002, we knew that we'd have our fair share of legal troubles along the way. We were right. To date, we've had all sorts of requests to delete things, requests not to delete things, and a variety of legal threats, both valid and otherwise. However, I always assumed that the turning point would be a sweeping request for large-scale deletion of information that some vendor or other had taken exception to. I never imagined that the request might come from a researcher within the community itself, and I use that word loosely in modern times. But today, having spent a fair amount of time dealing with complaints from a particular individual who shall remain nameless, I realize that I'm done. The list has had its fair share of trolling, flooding, furry porn, fake exploits, and DDoS attacks over the years, but none of these things really... I miss the furry porn. I'm actually pretty happy about that.
I was going to say, how much furry porn do you get on there when it makes the owner's complaint list? That's a lot of porn.
I don't know, because I missed that part, and that's probably not a bad thing. but none of these things really affected the integrity of the list itself. However, taking a virtual hatchet to the list archives on the whim of an individual just doesn't feel right. That one of our own would undermine the efforts of the last 12 years is really the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm not willing to fight this fight any longer. It's getting harder to operate in an open forum in today's legal climate, let alone a security-related one. There is no honor amongst hackers anymore. There is no real community. There's precious little skill. The entire security game is becoming more and more regulated. This is all a sign of things to come and a reflection of the sad state of affairs in the industry that should never have been an industry. I'm suspending the service indefinitely. Thanks for playing. Cheers, John."
Hang on, Mops. I'd take question of that, the security thing there. Isn't the industry trying to regulate itself now as to get accreditation to be taken more seriously?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have different certs propping up, but pretty much at this point in the game, governments are stepping in to make regulation because companies haven't been fast enough to implement. There are only four states right now that don't have a mandatory disclosure law or mandatory breach notification law. Pretty much, if your systems get hacked or you suspect they might have been hacked, you are supposed to disclose that, and you have certain responsibilities about who you have to report that to, how you have to notify your customers. Then you'll have some obligations, usually for like credit monitoring and other things like that. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's kind of interesting. You said if you suspect that they got hacked, who's going to...
If you think that they got hacked...
No company is ever going to do that, because if they think they got hacked, like you said, they do credit monitoring and all that, they aren't going to want to pay for that.
Well,
why would anyone disclose...
That's the problem.
We think we got hacked.
Well, that's the thing, is there. You can get fined out the wazoo if, like, you know, if your information shows up on Pastebin... And then it comes out that, oh, yeah, our security guys notified us something might have been going on, but we ignored that. Yeah. So, yeah, the laws are starting to come in, and the problem is that the people writing the laws don't really understand what they're regulating.
Do they ever understand what they're regulating? It doesn't seem like...
No, probably not, but... At least in this field, I can speak with a little bit of a knowledge on the subject. A lot of times, it's like this new, they're trying SOPA again. And the people writing the law are saying, well, we want it to be notify and stay down. Because they're complaining that people re-upload stuff the moment it's taken down for a DMCA complaint. And so they want to be able to notify and have it stay down. Well, whoever's come up with that concept has absolutely no fucking idea how the internet works.
Yeah.
It's like, how exactly is that supposed to work? It's like, did they notify you once about a song, and now is it just that particular file stays down? If that case, maybe you could look at a hash and keep it off your system that way. Okay, fine. But it's kind of a slingshot way of getting responsibility back on websites, and which will ultimately kill user-created content, because the people writing this reg do not understand what they're regulating.
Right, and it's impossible to do that. Beyoncé tried it with that picture, and
Well,
look how well that worked.
I mean, okay, let's say they go the hash route. Like, oh, well, you complained about this particular version of, I don't know, a movie. Well, what do people on YouTube do? They pitch the audio up a little bit, or they mirror it, or God, I've seen all kinds of weird, they put bars on the video, or put it at odd resolutions. That's transforming the video. It won't hash the same. Is YouTube still responsible under, if they get that new reg through? Well, the lawyers would say yes. So, you tell me, how the hell is that supposed to practically happen other than somebody manually reviewing every video submission?
That's not practical.
Thank you. You're right. I did slip that word in there. It's
Yeah, you
it's
said practically done. I mean, manually
it
reviewing anything on the internet is not practical.
right. So it's not practical. There's no way to do it. Which the only alternative then is to shut down or fight every single thing in court. And that's not really feasible. But this whole litigious thing, I mean, that's part of what, shut down, full disclosure here. I mean, and everybody gets worn down. I'm no blame towards the admins for just finally saying the hell with it. And you're getting beat over the head with a hammer day after day. Eventually, you're going to move and just give up. I mean,
It's definitely interesting, though. It's from one user. Why can't they just say, "All right, F you, Banhammer"?
Why don't they just oust him
oh, I'm
Yeah,
sure
let the
it's some kind
community
of
take
legal
care of it in
threat.
a public beating.
Say who it is, the
It's got to
community will
be
take care of him.
it's got to be some kind of a legal threat, to get something like yanked out of the archives.
Doesn't sound like just one thing.
Yeah,
Sounds like a
it's
lot of things.
he said taking
Yeah.
a hatchet to the archives. It sounds like I don't know, like they're pulling a Steven and they want everything he was in, this one person was involved in yanked.
Yeah. I wonder if this one person's not actually a person, but is technically classed as a person in a certain country where those sort of things are classed as people and have a shitload of money. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Corporation.
I don't know the situation. There were a few, I saw a few articles speculating, but I didn't really like any of them, so I'm just kind of going with it. But, I mean, the truth is, it is getting harder to operate any kind of an open forum. You get somebody coming in there being a legal ass hat, or just, hell, you got like the social justice brigade off Tumblr suddenly. I mean, taking an interest in something and just absolutely destroying it. So, and the way people, threaten lawsuits and sue and DMCA takedowns, and hell, DMCA takedowns just to get shit off the internet, even if it's not valid, it still works. I mean, it really is getting hard to run any kind of an open forum. Hell, we don't have an open forum on G15. We point to Reddit for that. It's because I don't want to deal with the headache of that stuff.
Yeah. I've been there twice. Once it was blank, and the second time was, I don't even know why I was there.
Well, L Laura has effectively filled it up. Don't know if you've looked at the G15 subreddit or not, but there it's all links to Laura stuff.
Good for him, because I'm not about to go in and link my stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, he does the work, so
Yeah.
I
Good
don't
luck
know.
to him.
I mean, you guys have any opinion on that? I mean, trying to
On
run forums without just getting destroyed anymore with, people who either legally or otherwise are just coming in to shut things down because they don't like it.
I mean,
Right.
I think anybody who runs their own forum these days has got balls with the amount of trolls and just opinionated crybaby fuckwits out there. If you're gonna run one, man, you gotta go in with your eyes open. You can't think it's gonna be puppies, kittens, and rainbows, man. It's gonna be hate and fucking threats of lawsuits. Let's face it, the internet's become the place to go when you're feeling a little butthurt about something to take your anger out on something where no one can fight back.
Right.
Dear internet, I fucking hate you because my mommy grounded me because I wanted an iPod. And I hate this shit music. Whatever, fuck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I just it has gotten real litigious, though. I mean, people are in court over shit they post to Tumblr and Facebook.
I think it's just a symptom of a sick society, man. A society that won't self-police, that won't get together and have a group lynching in the town square with the biggest cockhead.
That's interesting.
If we went back to those days, that would be good.
Now, that's interesting because that comes back to a conversation that a Madman and Analog and I were having earlier, and lynchings were kind of the conclusion we were coming to. It's like, hey, you can even reuse the rope.
Yeah, it doesn't cost the family a thing, and it sends a very effective message. You know, don't be a fuckhead. Control yourself. You know, have some self-restraint. That is the one big problem that I run into constantly within the community and working in community affairs, is no one has any self-restraint or takes any self-responsibility for dickhead actions. It's always somebody else's fault, never theirs.
Well, of course, it's the internet. It's the place where people go to yell at other people's and without repercussions.
And another issue, no one wants to have a debate anymore.
Yeah, they always they just don't want to shut you down. Yeah,
they don't even try to listen to another point of view or evidence that may back that up. They just want to state something and that be the end of it.
I mean, this is pretty much why I stay in a very close, tight circle of individuals. I don't want the outside noise bleeding in. Because we've had outside noise bleed into this group before, and fuck me, it's horrible.
Just unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's divisive and unnecessary.
I don't want to be too insular, though. That also breeds problems.
Well, I understand that. And you look, we have actually added a lot of people over the years, but we've learned not just to add anyone. Hi, Steven.
Yeah. For anybody who doesn't get that joke, and you've been through the IHN archives.
Yeah. It used to be very free and open to anybody who wanted to come on. And unfortunately, free and open also brings a lack of responsibility of individuals within the unit. And therefore, you get certain people who display open mental illness issues. And we don't really give a shit whether you're, well, if you listen to any of it, and if you actually get what we're talking about, we don't really give a fuck what anyone's problem is, or what their race is, or what their sexuality is. We'll make fun of anything. Sometimes you have to go, sorry, you can't come in wearing those shoes, because your autism's just too much for me.
Well, we were recruiting out of Second Life at that point in time, so there's that.
So how many dancing cocks did you have on the show at one time?
Quite a few.
15, something like that?
Yeah, we had quite a few dancing cocks. And as not just to gender lock in the corner of the cock, we had some massive fucking cunts as well.
Oh, I was just thinking, the last time I was on Second Life, I saw a forest of dancing cocks.
Yep, no, I can't touch that one. Yeah. Nor would I want to.
I found myself in a weird sim and left.
That's
So would that be called the woods of cocks?
Yes, it was a forest of human phalluses.
Well, I mean, you can't just be a closed-off system. You got to allow new people in and stuff like that. But Jesus, man, you got to vet like fuck these days, because you end up with people from Tumblr. And I'm sorry, we're picking on the makers of Tumblr, but Jesus, man, clean your shit up. That place is a fucking mess.
At that point, there's no cleaning it up. You delete the database and start over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, geez, I thought 4chan was the Wild West, where you went to get insulted, but man, no way. 4chan's like child-friendly compared to Tumblr.
We came up with a pretty good phrase. Actually, I think Madman came up with it. What did we decide? 4chan was the kiddie pool of horrible?
Yes. 4chan is the kiddie pool of horrible. It's where you start putting your foot into the possible horrible side of the internet, but you're too scared to full-blown jump in.
Yeah. Yeah, you've seen movement at the deep end of the pool, and you're not quite sure what it is just yet. So you go to the spawning pool and run with the puppies in the daytime before you play with the wolves at night.
Dude, I'm not sure I want to go into the deep end of the internet. It is a scary and dark place.
You have no fucking idea.
So a tumbler would be like one of those bubbling geysers under the water, wouldn't it? It just bits of it seeps out into the regular sea.
I think you might be giving it too much credit there.
It's on the edge of the kiddie pool where the retarded kids are sent to play. I didn't want them around me.
Yeah, you're not quite sure whether it's a Klondike bar or a turd floating there.
Actually, if it's surrounded by Tumblr people, it's a turd, and they're just deciding which one of them should eat it first.
Oh, damn.
It would be politically incorrect not to taste it. I mean, somebody took the trouble to make it.
You thought about that.
I think you just summed it up.
Wow.
Oh. Fantastic Mad Men.
In You're the words of a Judge Dredd robot, eat recycled food. You Tumblr morons.
So we have a feedback form on the website, and I will appropriately forward all messages as requested after laughing at them. So we may, in fact, do dramatic readings if they're good enough. I just want to point this out.
That would be epic.
That could be an entire show in and of itself if we get enough hate mail.
All right, current events. First story up. This one is from TheVerge.com. Following small-scale trials, Korean officials are reportedly moving forward with a plan to install remote management software on students' smartphones. iSmartKeeper is an app that restricts the... what the hell?
iSmartKeeper? Did they get a Down syndrome person to come up with the name of that?
They may have.
It's Korean. It just might not translate well.
Let's try that again. iSmartKeeper is an app that restricts what services and apps students have access to. With the app installed, teachers have the ability to lock phones down into one of six modes. Educators can choose to lock all of the phones in the school, allow only emergency calls, allow only phone calls. I have been signed... Oh, what the hell? That's annoying. I just got signed out of my show notes.
Please stand by as we temporarily reset the MOPS.
Interesting. Let me scroll back down. Where was I? Apparently Google has added a timeout. That's not come up before. Interesting.
Thank you, Google. Oh, shit, we didn't want.
Yeah, pretty much. Doesn't matter. They're open up. They're open now. Here we go. Allow calls and SMS or turn off specific apps. The idea is to prevent distractions in class, and iSmartKeeper can also allow access to only a single app, ensuring that educational apps can be... still be used as teaching aids. These settings can adhere to a schedule, so a teacher could automate the settings, for example, to allow access only to certain educational apps in class while preventing text messages and chat, and then unlock the phones entirely during recess. The app can also utilize GPS geofencing, because that works so well, to automatically begin restricting phones as students enter school grounds. In addition to the teacher tools, parents are provided with a management app that can block access to certain apps on a permanent basis, or similar scheduling tools to prevent a child from chatting while they're supposed to be completing their homework. Let me just clarify something here real quick for you. These phones the school is controlling and installing shit on, they don't belong to the school. These are the students' private property.
That's what I was wondering. Are they providing this shit, or is this their own?
It's like they're mandating that you will install this on your phone so that we can control it.
Yeah.
Once again, if these little fucktards had just an ounce of self-control, we wouldn't need to see applications like this entering our schools.
Well, it gets even better. To date, the app has been trialed in at least 11 schools in Korea's capital, Seoul, and in other nearby provinces with mixed results. At least three schools chose not to continue with the scheme after finding the children were rooting their phones to prevent the restrictions. One student reported that the geofencing tools didn't work, leading to phones being locked down for hours after the kid had left school. The app is also Android-only, meaning children with iOS or Windows Phone are left unaffected. Android has a huge lead in Korea, largely due to the popularity of native brands like LG and Samsung, but iSmartKeeper's developers say an iOS version is coming next month. Others have raised concerns over the app's draconian nature, with one professor calling it a violation of the students' human rights. Nevertheless,
That guy's a moron. I want to say that.
Nevertheless, Korea's Gangwon Provincial Office of Education is reportedly advising all 677 schools in the province to begin using iSmartKeeper, while other areas of the country continue to trial the software. What happens if you refuse to install? It's like, no, this is my phone. I'm not letting you install software on it. What happens?
They kick you out of that school.
There'll be an agreement. Like,
yeah.
When I was in school, you just weren't allowed to have a smartphone out in class.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. You didn't have smartphones. You weren't allowed to have your cell phone in class, was the way that was phrased.
Well, when I was in school, there were no phones.
And we just didn't have cell phones out in class.
Yep.
You have a policy. Kids, you can't use your cell phone. Today you're doing maths.
I mean, I guess this will be good for the nerdy kids I used to know in school, because those guys are going to be popular as hell. Hey, dude, root my phone for me so I don't have to be tracked everywhere.
I think you go, hey, dude, unlock my phone or I beat the fucking shit out of you.
Or there's that, yeah.
Isn't this Korea? Isn't it populated by entirely like nerds and then hot chicks that want to rape you? Or am I getting this mixed up with some other anime that I saw?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm lost. Well, I don't know.
Well,
self-restraint. Self-restraint, you won't have to worry about it.
Yeah, you know, the whole, you just don't whip out your phone in the middle of the class and start texting people, or, you know, maybe don't have an annoying ringtone.
I would just say, the teachers say you can't have your phone in class. That's fine, but they don't have a right to put anything on my private property.
Yeah, but Korea is not exactly America.
Well, no, it's not.
Remember, we've done stories about America where kids were getting in trouble for crap they were posting on Facebook, you know, when they weren't at school at all. So,
that's fucked up too.
I think we could solve the schooling problem with funding and everything like that. Don't want to be there, don't go, don't care. And you're no longer the burden of the state because you didn't do 12 years of education. And you're not entitled to anything. I'm sorry. You lose. How's that? That would work perfectly.
You just
sorry,
lose.
You didn't do 12 years of school. You get no benefits when you leave. You get no tax breaks if you get a job. No welfare if you find yourself unemployed because you didn't attend school.
You just lose.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right, next one up is from Reuters, or, you know, Reuters. Depending.
Don't.
Okay. Don't want to do that joke. That's fine.
Nope.
Brazil will drop a controversial provision that would have forced global internet companies to store data on Brazilian users inside of the country to shield them from U.S. spying, a government minister has said on Tuesday. The rule was added last year to proposed internet governance legislation after the revelations that the U.S. National Security Agency had spied on digital communications of Brazilians, including those of their president, Dilma Rousseff, and the country's biggest company, Petróleo Brasileiro S.A. Instead, the legislation says that companies such as Google Inc. and Facebook Inc. are subject to Brazilian law in cases involving information on Brazilians, even if the data is stored abroad. Congressional Relations Minister Idel Salvati told reporters. She said the bill, which is opposed by Rousseff allies in the lower chamber of Congress, has enough support to be put to the vote on Wednesday. Svati said the government will not negotiate a key provision in the bill on net neutrality, which has faced strong opposition from telecom companies in Brazil, because it would bar them from introducing differential pricing according to internet usage and speeds, such as higher rates for downloading videos. That's not a bad thing. Regulation of the business aspect of the new legislation can be done later by executive decree, she said. Okay, that's not the way you want to do that either. The legislation dubbed Brazil's Internet Constitution protects freedom of expression, safeguards privacy, and sets limits on the gathering and use of metadata on internet users. Blah, 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 blah. However, following spying revelations based on documents leaked by former No Such Agency contractor Edward Snowden require internet companies to store data on Brazilians inside the country. Yeah, so they're still fighting over the law, but it looks like that the provision allowing, you know, that's not going to force Facebook and Google to store everything on servers inside of Brazil is going to win. nobody cares.
Not really.
I did catch a part of that. Were they trying to make it where it was they were banning ISPs from putting rate limits, or were they trying to okay rate limits?
They were trying to ban the rate limits.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And but it looks like it's got a good shot at passing. And the thing in there, though, that's interesting was several months back, Brazil was going to pass a law saying if you had data on Brazilian users, you had to have it on a server inside of Brazil. So it would be subject to Brazilian law instead of... Yeah, that's the problem with that. I think that's why it's good it was dropped, because I don't know what you would accomplish other than just getting services blocked. So
now the stating that you're subject to Brazilian law, I can kind of understand that. You are doing commerce within their country.
Well, good luck enforcing it, but, you know. It's like, you're subject to Brazilian law. I don't live in Brazil.
Not a problem. Your website's no longer accessible in Brazil.
And I have no control over that, so there you go.
And Google, have fun doing business in one of the largest, one of the fastest growing economies on the planet.
Well, Google wouldn't have had a problem with it, but what about, you know, what if we had a forum going? You know, I know we just said I wouldn't do it, but let's say we did have a forum going and somebody from Brazil signed up. Would I have to go rent a server out of Brazil just to hold a couple of profiles?
Jeez. Oh, that one I'm not seeing being passed, and they wouldn't be having trouble enforcing it, but saying a company doing business on the internet in Brazil, let's say I'm selling shoes over the internet and Brazilians are buying them, that being subject to Brazilian law, I can kind of see. Well, actually, shoes is still an export business. It'd need to be an entirely internet-based business. Let's say I owned Netflix. Netflix being subject to Brazilian law, I can see that if they want to do business with customers in Brazil.
Yeah, I don't like the concept of saying somebody is subject to law, period. Like, if you're not living in that country, because... Well, let's just say, I don't know, let's pick a fun example. Let's say Iran decided that we are subject to Iranian law because somebody in Iran could potentially be hearing what we're saying. Good luck with that. But
their method of enforcement is we're no longer able to be heard in Iran.
Yeah.
That's block why I said it had IPs. To be a completely internet-based business. They just block us.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Let's see. Next one up is from computerworld.com. Citing the need to protect users from government cyber spying, Google has tightened Gmail's encryption screws by removing the option to turn off HTTPS. Google first gave people the option of encrypting their Gmail sessions via HTTPS communications protocol in 2008. Google turned it on by default in 2010 for all users, but allowed them to turn it off manually. Not anymore. Why would you turn it off?
No idea.
No, I'm trying.
Firewall,
I'm trying to think.
Restrictions, I guess. But
I'm trying to think of
think
a real
would be
reason.
The other way. Yeah.
I maybe if you had some ancient text-based browser that didn't support it, but
I'm just trying to think of what good this would do. I'm thinking Google's already caved whenever the NSA has walked up and said, "Hi, I want to know what these people are saying."
Yeah, they have, because they get a national security letter. There's not really anything they can do.
They legal? Could not comply.
I don't know what happens if you don't comply with one of those things. I think they just shoot you.
Well, then they're forcing encryption to be on doesn't matter, because the NSA will just walk up and say, "Hi, I need your encryption keys."
And they've done that, actually. They did that to LavaBit. And when the guy printed it out in 4-point font and delivered it on paper, they held him in contempt of court.
That's not contempt. That's abiding by the judge's ruling.
So, starting today, Gmail will always use encrypted HTTPS connection when you check or send email. Nicholas Lisborski. There's a name. Nicholas Lisborski, Gmail security engineering lead, wrote in a blog post Thursday. He highlighted the security benefits of HTTPS permanently on. Today's change means that no one can listen to your messages when they go back and forth from between you and Gmail servers, because your email is so interesting that everyone wants to tap into it. That's right, you. Your email personally is that interesting, because everybody cares about the notes you're getting from your mother.
I live a very interesting life.
In addition, all messages sent or received by Gmail users will remain encrypted while moving among Google's data centers. That is something we made top priority after list servers. Notice it doesn't say they're encrypted when they're just sitting on the servers. You know, what's called at rest in the industry. When asked for comment about security speed trade-off using HTTPS, a Google spokesperson said the Gmail team had worked hard to mitigate any performance impact. Really? HTTPS hasn't been a performance impact since, like, the Pentium 3. Maybe on server side, but certainly not client side. Yeah, actually, it would be a bit of an impact server side. And still, though, I mean, that's like...
Yeah. It's worth the penalty.
Gmail had an uptime of 99.978%. Sure that it did, because they're the ones saying that number. You know what? That story wasn't as interesting. When I read the headline, I was thinking that they were encrypting their data between their data servers, or data center servers, when they were syncing stuff.
That was the problem originally, right?
Yeah, but I guess I misread the article, or maybe that was a different article. Yeah, so, okay, you can no longer use unencrypted email with Google. I mean, good move, but... You
still run the risk of, do like SSL stripping and stuff like that with FireSheep and whatnot, right?
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that. FireSheep's a good point. Well, FireSheep's something different, but SSL strip.
Yeah.
If you had the option to turn HTTPS off on an account, if you could do man in the middle, do SSL strip, and then insert the, go into their options page after you've stolen their cookie. Be like, oh, yeah, no, just turn HTTP off. That's fine. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
You're right, because if somebody could get that setting spoofed, they could then run SSL strip on you and get your email.
Right.
Well, that's nice. Still, not as big as I thought it was. So, yeah.
You really did bring up a good point, though. Why would you turn that off if it's turned on by default? Like, I know Yahoo just did it as well for their mail service, like, 10 years too late or whatever, but you know, good point. Why do they even have that as an option? Why do they even have that as an option anywhere?
Well, I'm trying to think, why would you turn it off? The only thing I can think that would reasonably come up, and I use the word very loosely there, is maybe you work at a company that mans in the middle all SSL connections, and it's the only way to make your email work is to go in and turn off SSL, because it's not going to accept the certificate.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I know several of the firewall vendors actually market the SSL man in the middle for IDS. And,
sure.
You know, that's usually that involves installing a cert on everyone's machines. But I'm pretty sure Firefox has its own certificate store. I don't know if Chrome uses its own or if it uses Windows. I can't remember on that one now. But I could see that coming up if you had a machine that was getting SSL manned in the middle. I could see that as being a way to kind of make it work. That's not a great way to make it work, though. But sort of like making the car work by, putting kerosene in it. I don't know.
If it's a diesel engine, it'll work for a little while.
Yeah.
The rotary. It'll run perfectly.
For a little while.
No, just change the spark plugs out. Depending, you run hot spark plugs, cold spark plugs, or medium temperature plugs. Rotary engines were designed to run on all fuels.
Oh. Well, cool.
Interesting. That's cool.
They're not efficient on any fuel, but they were designed to run on all fuels.
Nice. All right, let's go to the next one here. This is from CNET.com. Alex Kipkalpo, a former senior architect at Microsoft who recently served as a director of product management for Five9 Software, according to his LinkedIn profile, has been arrested for allegedly stealing Windows-related trade secrets while working for Microsoft. Uh, Kip Kib Kablo.
Nice name.
Yeah, Kibkalo. Was arrested on Wednesday, according to a report in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Really? Is that thing called the Seattle Post-Intelligencer? That's a
weird name.
Feels like there should not be an R on the end of that word.
Intelligencer.
Okay.
I'm going to go read a book and make myself more intelligencer.
According to a complaint filed on March 17th in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington, Kib Kalpko, a Russian national and former former Microsoft employee based in Lebanon, passed on trade secrets involving Windows 8 to an unnamed technology blogger in France. Microsoft's own investigation found that Kib Kalpko uploaded proprietary software, including pre-release software updates for Windows 8 RT and ARM devices, as well as Microsoft Activation Server Software Development Kit to a computer in Redmond, Washington, and subsequently used his personal Windows Live SkyDrive account. So he stole information and uploaded it to a Microsoft server?
An essay and nothing of value was lost. This is Windows 8 we're talking about, right?
Kib Kalpko,
I really dislike that. That
Kib Kalpko is then said to have... I bet it's Kib Kalpko. I bet that's how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm saying it from now on. That is said to have provided the blogger, which wasn't referenced in the article till now, provided the blogger with links to his files on his account. The unnamed blogger was known to those in the Microsoft blogging community for posting screenshots of pre-release versions of Windows operating systems. According to the complaint, this person was also posting information to his own websites and on Twitter, according to the document. Kib Kalpko also found by Microsoft to have elicited assistance from an acquaintance in Washington State to set up a virtual machine on a server to help distribute the data and the products, the complaint said. Kib Kalpko worked for Microsoft for 7 years, according to the complaint. It also notes that in 2012, Kib Kalpko received a poor performance review and threatened to resign if the review was not amended before he left the company. So they didn't amend his review. He acknowledged leaking confidential and proprietary Microsoft information products and product-related information to
Didn't
the blogger.
Didn't that be just automatic dismissal?
Yeah, pretty much. According to his LinkedIn profile, he joined blah, 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 blah. So, okay. What they're saying, other articles are saying he actually had uploaded the source for parts of Windows. And I really hope whoever the hell he sent it to distributes that out somewhere.
Yeah.
Because maybe
That'd
they can
cool.
fix it.
I fixed it. I put Windows 7 on my computer. I can now play video games and it acts like a computer.
All right, there you go.
Well, what's really interesting is it said the Microsoft Activation Server Software Development Kit. That's
sounds
a whole
interesting,
lot
doesn't
of
it?
Key gens that are being generated now, I see from that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Interesting.
So.
I mean, someone has always got to leak this stuff, you'd think. Either that or someone's getting in without other people's knowledge and taking it. But
I imagine both are probably going on.
Yeah, this dude just got caught.
So, anyway, sucks to be him, because Microsoft has the money to make sure he never sees the outside of that little hole ever again.
Yeah, that's not going to go well for him. Definitely... I mean, they said they arrested him. I mean, really, what's he doing?
It's a civil, yeah.
It's civil. It's
yeah,
not criminal.
Yeah, it's civil. That's kind of why I was wondering how can he get arrested
Theft.
For this?
Theft. Yeah.
But that goes back to the age-old piracy complaint of what did he steal? There's nothing physically that's missing. He made a copy, you know?
Stole the knowledge of the company.
Yeah, I agree. He stole intellectual property, but that's not... He didn't physically take anything.
Nothing of value
be...
was missing. There's
yeah.
Everything that's supposed to be there is there.
Yeah.
It's copyright infringement or patent infringement.
Yeah, and
it's
since when
civil.
Can you get arrested for
so,
copyright infringement? Or
take his money,
take...
but you
since
can't
the Americans
take his freedom.
Since the Americans tried to nab Kim.com, since then.
And they were wrong. Wait a minute, I'm an American. And we were wrong.
Ha! Nice.
I don't recognize the regime as a legitimate governing power. They were wrong.
There you go. All right, let's see. Next one up is from Torrent Freak. Oh, this one's fun. Like many large entertainment industry companies, WWE is an aggressive protector of its copyrights and for several years has been pursuing companies and site owners who dare to step over the line. Yes, it's the World Wrestling crap. Part of that strategy is to force fan sites to hand over their domains should they include WWE in their URL. For owners of the sites, which threaten their PPV and streaming sales, things aren't much better. During March of 2013, Facebook said that WWE intellectual property director Matthew Winteroth was behind the closure of a page operated by Wrestling-Network, a site offering links to WWE streams and shows. Wrestling Network operator BB was told by the social network that he would need to contact a lawyer directly to solve the dispute. BB decided to quit Facebook and move to Twitter instead, but by summer, WWE had raised its head again, this time after PayPal disabled an account used for the site's finances. Wow. They actually got PayPal to shut his account down. That's annoying. Shouldn't like, you need a judge to do that? Because that's their money.
Did they shut his account down and freeze it, or just say you can't use PayPal anymore, here's your money?
It doesn't say.
If they gave him his money back, it's good. If they didn't, it's theft.
BB says that in October, WWE sent a takedown notice to Cloudflare, who handed over the details of the site's actual host. For a few months, things went calm, but last week, all that changed. PayPal closed the site's new account, which had been operated by a third party, and Facebook shut down Wrestling Network's new page and BB's personal page while they were at it. At this point, things took a turn for the unusual. After being Winteroth's contact details by Facebook, BB contacted the lawyer to see what could be done. My Facebook page was removed. Care to share why? BB wrote in an email to WWE last Saturday. Without being even given any further details aside from BB's email address, which is enough to connect him with Wrestling Network via a simple Google search, Winteroth wrote straight back, suggesting that there might have been some kind of mistake. What is your name, address, and Facebook page that was potentially inadvertently removed, and I'll look into it, the lawyer wrote. What is your name and address?
Yeah. I'll look into it. Tell me exactly who you are so I can come and sue your ass.
All he responded with was just the URL to the Facebook page. Since Winteroth was the person named by Facebook as being responsible for the takedowns, it would be reasonable to presume that he already knew the circumstances behind the page's disappearance, so suggesting at this point there might have been some kind of error seemed somewhat unusual. Nevertheless, Winteroth further underlines that notion in a rather unusual follow-up email. Because in the email, after he asked for his name, all he sent him was the Facebook link, right? I'll also need your name and address in order to address this matter, and to send you a gift bag of WWE items as an apology for taking down your Facebook page.
He's hoping he's an idiot and doing phishing. I love this.
Needless to say, BB wasn't tempted to take up the offer. I just woke up, and while I was checking my phone, I read the email and started laughing hysterically, BB forms a torrent freak. I mean, I heard a long time ago about a case where in order to arrest them on U.S. territory, some guys were attracted to the USA by undercover FBI agents who promised them money and girls. But a gift bag from WWE? Really? He could at least have given me some WrestleMania tickets.
Yes.
BB says that he politely declined the offer. That's so generous of you, but no thanks, he just told Winteroth. I just want my page back since I didn't post any links to copyright material like you claim. Exactly 20 minutes later, the WWE's lawyer tone had changed. Thank you for your correspondence. We have shut down your Facebook page and also worked with PayPal to permanently suspend your payment processor account with them. We now have your address and whereabouts in Romania, he explained. Should you not shut down the website and agree not to infringe WWE intellectual property in the future, in an immediate fashion, WWE will continue to work with our counsel in Romania, as well as relevant legal authorities, including the Ministry of Internal Affairs, Bucharest City Police, and Romanian National Audiovisual Council on our ongoing criminal complaint against you. What followed were demands for BB to hand over his domain with tempers beginning to fray. That seemed unlikely. He responded to them, if you don't know, Romania is not a state in the United States of America. Romania is a country in Eastern Europe. It's okay. The lawyer's American. He may have actually not known that.
No.
I'm kind of sad because it's true.
Yeah. I lost my place. Crap. unless you figured it out by now, U.S. law does not apply here and no Romanian law is being violated, BB told WWE in a Anika, I don't get the reference, inspired response. Yes, this the, is... Huh?
It's the guy from the Pirate Bay that's in jail right now.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, yep. You're right. I just didn't catch that. This is why we are working closely with Romanian legal authorities in this matter, who have more knowledge of the current state of Romanian law than either you or I, BB was informed. Your website how do they know what knowledge of the law he has? That's kind of presumptuous, don't you think?
We're lawyers. We know everything.
Your website exists to infringe WWE intellectual property in a wholesale fashion, and such illegal use will not be tolerated. At this point, relations truly broke down. So BB responded to them, okay, I'm going to go outside and wait for the SWAT team. Or are you going to send SEAL Team 6? Well, whatever. In the meantime, you can go fuck yourself, Captain Skinny Dick, BB told Rob.
Captain Skinny Dick, yeah.
And then he responds, he also put, oh, since you wanted my name and address, here it is. I'm not going to read this guy's address. It doesn't need to be
123 Fake Street, Romania.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, please stop with these legal threats, Judge Judy. Go back in your room and watch Suits and Law and Order.
Oh, nice.
Signing off with a request for Winteroth to say hi to WWE Supremo Vince McMahon, BB severed his negotiations with WWE and has heard no more since. So that's pretty much the end of it there. I just really liked the lawyer saying, yeah, we'll send you a gift bag. Tell us where you are.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's awful. I wonder how many times that's actually worked.
Are
Hopefully
they still
none, but probably more than once.
How are they arguing Linux in the IRC? We haven't talked about Linux in a while.
We were talking about Microsoft.
Ah, okay.
Adoption. And all that.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen.
OSs and changing.
Okay, I just saw that. They're talking wine and Jack in there, and I don't know. Wine's kind of hit and miss. If it works, it usually works really well. But anyways.
I've had any luck with that with wine, but anyway, sir.
Mostly when I've had it work. Best things I've had working around wine were Reaper, the doll, and some games actually ran really, really well. Payday 2 actually ran really well in wine. A couple of other things. Let's see. This next one up is from CNET.com. Using some trickery, hackers were able to breach Electronic Arts' website and transform one of its pages into a bogus Apple login screen. Once users logged into the fake site, they were prompted to input their credit card number, date of birth, and other personal information. God, I hope people didn't actually fall for that.
But that's what I always think, is who's dumb enough to fall for this shit?
Be surprised.
Yeah, I know.
Lots of people.
God damn it.
Security firm Netcraft crafted. Security firm Netcraft discovered the breach and notified EA on Tuesday. The game maker told CNET that it investigated Netcraft's claims, and as of Wednesday, the phishing page is gone. We have found it, we have isolated it, and we are making sure such attempts are no longer possible. EA spokesperson John Rosenberg told CNET, privacy and security are of the utmost importance to us. Cue hysterical laughter. It's freaking EA. They don't give a shit. The way the hackers created the fake Apple screen was by accessing one of EA's game servers, according to Netcraft. The server hosted an outdated calendar that had several vulnerabilities and was likely the way the hackers got into the system and set up the phishing page. The phishing site attempts to trick a victim into submitting his Apple ID and password, Netcraft wrote in a blog post. It then presents a second form, which asks the victim to verify his full name, credit card number, expiration date, verification code, date of birth, phone number, mother's maiden name, and other details that would be useful to a fraudster. You don't say.
Yeah, there's some stolen identity triggers right there.
Oh, they even did it. They did it right. After submitting these details, the victim is redirected to the legitimate Apple ID website.
But why would you type in EA.com and expect to see an Apple login?
Or they wouldn't.
That's what doesn't fucking make any sense.
Well, it's probably automated. It was probably something where EA had some old version of software that was floating around. I've seen this actually quite a bit with PHP MyAdmin, where old versions of that would have a code injection in the URL or remote code execution and you know, remote file include vulnerabilities, and you'd see some automated crap come in, set up a fake page that looks like a bank or Apple or whatever, and then start spamming out the email address trying to get people to click on the link. It doesn't matter that it was EA. It was just a server that they happened to pop, and it's just kind of funny that it was EA.
Right.
And,
okay.
And you know, this is my problem. EA buys up a lot of games. Think about this. How many old video game and movie websites are still floating around out there unmaintained? Like, haven't been touched in 10 years.
Yeah.
Think about
PHP BB bulletin boards and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Think about the kind of vulnerabilities that have got to be floating around on those servers that just haven't been touched. They've been forgotten about ever since the marketing job was over, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And EA buys up a lot of game companies. So, you know, how you feel about EA as a company aside, that's a huge infrastructure they have to maintain. And, you know, obviously they're not getting it perfect because there's, you know, old servers floating around out there that people are popping and setting up phishing pages on.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good point.
I mean, if you run a network, you have got to audit your web servers and see what all's still running out there.
Especially internet facing.
I mean, if you've got, and this is obviously somebody's just lost track of, you know, some service they set up for a game that's, you know, 5 years old now or whatever. I'd have no idea what game from the article. I'm just guessing. But,
well,
you know,
EA probably has a whole Class B network or whatever, you know, like something like 16 million addresses.
Don't they set up a forum for every game they publish? I mean,
I would probably.
I mean, a lot of game companies do.
That's a lot of servers.
Yeah. So, I just, it's got to be difficult to maintain.
Definitely.
So, let's see. Next one up is from ArsTechnica.com. Members of the Tor Anonymity Service are warning that a Tor iOS app available in Apple's highly curated app store since November is a fake that is laced with adware and spyware. The Tor browser in the Apple App Store is a fake. The report ticket published 2 months ago on the Tor website by a high-ranking volunteer Phobos stated, "It's full of adware and spyware. Two users have called to complain. We should have it removed." The ticket went on to say that Tor officials notified Apple of the fake Tor browser app in December. In the intervening time, the app has remained available, touching off a series of exchanges among Tor members about how to respond. Ours was unable to confirm the claims of adware or spyware. Still, the incident highlights the lack of transparency in the way Apple vets the reliability of security apps in response to complaints of rogue titles. Apple responded today with a chance for the author to defend their app, one volunteer wrote shortly after the ticket was opened. Another sent an email to App Store Notices at. Phobos replied a few weeks later. Early Wednesday, some 2 months later, yet another Tor member wrote, "I think naming and shaming is now in order. Apple has been putting users at risk for months now." Another member quickly replied, "I'm mailed Windrow Snyder and John C. Kalos to see if they can get us past the bureaucracy. Otherwise, I guess plan C is to get high-profile people on Twitter to ask Apple why it likes harming people who care about privacy." So the Tor people are going to start attacking Apple's executives because they aren't removing this fake Tor app. And the only reason I really care about the story is you probably don't want to pull down the Tor browser bundle on iOS right now because it sounds like there's some dispute as to whether or not it's actually what you want to be running.
Yeah, for sure.
Ah, here we go. Tor browser bundle published by the NSA. Yeah, that's the one you want to use. So, no such agency. Got it. Right. Anyways. I heard that joke the other day, and I've been having fun with it. So
my problem is, Apple is helping to foster botnets.
Yep,
that's what this does. That hurts the internet as a whole.
Another reason to hate that awful company.
So let's see. I believe this is the last one. Yeah, last one up. This is from ComputerWorld.com. A Linux worm that targets routers and set-top boxes is now looking for full-fledged computers to use its new feature, a cryptocurrency mining function, according to Symantec. Symantec spotted the worm, which it calls Darlaws, in November. It was preloaded with usernames and passwords for routers and set-top boxes that run Linux on Intel's x86 chip architecture and other embedded devices such as PPC, MIPS, and MIPSEL. So pretty much anything except ARM. Let's see. The latest variant of Dalos, found by Symantec in mid-January, leaks your computers running Intel architecture, wrote Kairu Hayashi, a senior development member and threat analyst with Symantec in Japan. The version of the worm called installs CPU Miner, which is an open source mining program, it wrote. It then begins mining for min coins or dog coins, two spin-offs of Bitcoin. It's mining for dog coins, or is it doggy
awesome.
Coin? Is it dog coin, dodge coin, or doggy coin? I never get that one straight.
Take your pick, dude. There's
ways
I've
to pawn coin.
Got
several
it.
Videos. It doesn't matter.
Bitcoins cannot be mined efficiently anymore by personal computers, but min coins and dog coins can. The reason for this is that mine coins and dog coins use Scrypt and can still mine successfully on home PCs, whereas Bitcoin requires custom ASIC chips to be profitable. The attacker uses the latest variant of Darlos mined. Oh, using his latest variant of Darlos mined 42,438 dog coins worth about $46.
Nice.
And 282 min coins worth about 150 by the end of the month. These amounts are relatively low for average cybercrime activity, so we expect the hacker to continue to evolve their threat through increased monetization, Hatashi wrote. The new Darlos comes preloaded with 13 login credential combinations, including some for IP cameras, he wrote. Last month, Symantec scanned the entire address space for the internet and found around 31,716 devices infected with Darlos in 139 regions. Half of the infections were in China, the U.S., and South Korea. Wait, that doesn't make sense. Half of the infections were in China, the U.S., South Korea, Taiwan, and India. Okay. I'm
America
not sure why
that owns all them now.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that line's even in there. It's like half of the
you Russia go have Crimea. We have everything else.
Apparently. So okay, I'm done with that article. It's just funny because now they're the botnet is installing, you know, the miner. It's installing CG miner and mining dog coins. Just,
yeah, I mean, that's not the first one to do that. Wasn't there that game?
Yeah,
that,
there was
that mined on your GPU also.
I mean, there were a couple of them that have done it. It's just dog coin.
Yeah,
I love it. It's mined 41,000 dog coins. It's worth about $46.
Yeah.
Okay, let's. You all won't be able to hear it, but that's okay. Let's go on to this. All right, for Digital Dojo, I've got a couple of things. Just real quick, Tails has been updated to version 0.023. It now spoofs MAC addresses by default. And if you haven't had a chance, play with the Windows camouflage mode in Tails. I hadn't played with it before and loaded it up. And just, I mean, it's not new in 2.3. It's been in there for a couple of versions now. But I laughed so hard when I saw this thing. And it's not that it's bad. It's well done. It's just really funny because it looks like an old XP box. They kind of grabbed one of the Windows XP themes for GNOME. And they set an icon for everything. And the idea is so that somebody won't realize that you're, you know, running Tails or Linux or whatever on your laptop, wherever you are. You're just, you know, Windows.
Does it even have the Windows background?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, jeez.
It looks like an old XP box. It's really funny because if you know what to look for, it's off just enough. You know what I mean?
Huh. Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
But, what's he wanting? Cycros, nice. I should grab that. If you ever see it, I want Tails for the Android. There are some Tor builds for Android out there, Cycros. I think they're not quite as, it's not full on Tails, but if you're just wanting to get the Tor browser going, I think there are some for Android. So that's what I got for Digital Dojo. I still think you ought to play with the camouflage mode. You ought to do the camouflage mode on your tablet. It's like, yeah, no, I'm just running XP. Nothing weird about that. That's an iPad. No, it's fine.
It's XP. Yeah. I swear. Nice.
So Sard sent me a link and I didn't get a chance to play with it. So Sard, do your digital dojo.
Okay.
No pressure. No pressure.
Yeah. Oh my god. My link was to some Linux war games.
It was at overthewire.org/wargames.
Yes, exactly. They actually have a ton of different war games there, but the one that I liked the most was called Bandit. Essentially what a war games is levels. They're kind of like different little challenges for you. So they give you a username and password, USSH into a box. And in order to progress to the next level, there's some challenge that you have to do in order to get the password for the user to the next level. So say you walk SSH to a server with Bandit 0, level 0, so then you need to get to level 1. Well, in order to get the Bandit 1 password, you have to do something. There's like 25 levels on this thing. It was actually really neat because a lot of it is a little bit of bash scripting, some different programs and things like that that I had never used. Things like XXD for reversing hex dumps. It shows you unique and using sort. I have a example here. The password for the next level is stored in a file, and it's the only line of text that occurs only once. So you take a look at this file, and it's got a whole bunch of, 10-character strings of text that are repeating. Well, obviously, the one that you want is the only one that occurs once, just like I said. Well, there's so much data in this text file that it would take you a freaking year to go through and sort it all. So that's why you want to use sort and you want to use unique, which pulls out unique data. Any data that repeats itself over and over again, it puts it out in a nice view for you to look at.
So were there guides on there, hints?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And that's kind of the nice thing about this is because there's good documentation that says, okay, this level, this is where the password is. This is what you should look at maybe doing. And at the bottom of it, it'll say, you might want to look at using these type of commands. One of them's du or grep or SSH or nmap, things like that. Some really neat different things. Some Base64 encoding in there, ROT13 encoding, SSHing with private keys, what the difference between binary and ASCII files are. Using nmap, how to use cron jobs, how to set up a netcat listener and transfer files, ASCII with it, all sorts of neat little things. So they're really cool. Like I said, there's like 25 levels. I went through all of them. They're all doable if you sit there and think about it. I had a couple problems with a couple levels, but kind of walked away from my computer, came back and went, and figured them out. And it was a lot of fun. If you like playing with Linux, I definitely recommend it.
Nice. I'm definitely going to have to play with that. I just haven't had a chance.
Yep.
So cool. Excellent. So, of course, listen to the stream. We've been putting a ton of work into it, and we're doing more work on it. So we'll get the volume issue sorted out, and we'll figure out how we're going to be running it here over the next couple of weeks. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Don't know when Shoot the Noise is coming back. Missing Dialogues. I think Lore said he was going to be coming back fairly soon with that. I know he was taking some time off. Of course, IHN on the Saturdays where we decide to do it. Have I missed any shows? I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, the IRC channel, the subreddit. The OS Grid sim is, in fact, down, and the box I was using to run that may be dead. I noticed it was off the other day and did not want to come back on. I did get the smell of brimstone. I think it was just on something related to Second Life just too long.
Damn, my porn dump's dead.
So that's
watch him go through it now, paranoid motherfucker.
No, I'm not going through it. I'm just gonna go find a pneumatic press to put that hard drive in and just be done with it. Now
there you go.
It's like, yeah, I just don't want that recovered, actually. So, and I don't trust fire to do the job. I need something a little bit more robust. Anyways, I think that's everything I've got for now.
Challenge for people this week. Tie your hard drive to the back of your car, drive to work for 5 days, and then see if you can get it to spin up on Saturday night for something to do.
I would not recommend using your primary hard drive for that.
It's up to the challenges, and it's posting the IRC next week how you went.
Yeah. Nice. I wonder if an SSD would survive it.
That's what I was going to say. I'd use an SSD. It would be fine.
It's up to you.
Maybe.
You know, the 5-day challenge. Each week I'm going to try and come up with a hardware challenge.
Awesome.
Robust and stuff like that. Because I don't drive to work, I will be tying my hard drive to the back of my pants and walking around the house for 5 days with it. Probably scratch the shit out of the floors, but that's for me and the wife and the landlord to work out. Drive to work 5 days and see if you can get it to spin up by Saturday.
If any of them survive, we're going to build computers out of them.
That's a great idea. I like that. Each week we're going to drag a piece of hardware around. Maybe the week after that we'll, tie a case to the back of a dirt bike and drive that around for an hour. Where however it comes out, we'll put it together at the end of the whole build. We'll auction it off for charity. The charity would be for beer for me, and it'll be great. It'll be the Dragon Box.
Wouldn't it be cheaper just to buy the beer here and ship it to you?
Probably. But, we'll put a challenge together for next week. But this week's challenge, drive to work for a week, dragging a hard drive behind you, and see if you can get it to spin up.
Nice.
The OS system, which will be Windows 7, we're going to use a disk and get a small dog and play Frisbee with it and see if we can get it to install.
Good luck with that.
I think it's golden. I'm already looking forward to next week's.
I am too. I think I'm gonna hit play on this music now before RU gets any more ideas.
It'll be great. Hold my beer.
No, that's right. You guys can't hear the music. Music.
user joined your channel.